If you have a Bible, and I hope that you do, turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1 through 7. If you don't have a Bible, we would love for you to have one. The Bibles that are in your seats are our gift to you. So if you find yourself here today without a Bible and need one, we'd encourage you to take that with you. We're in 1 Peter chapter 3. If you're new with us, it's your first time with us this morning, I just want to let you guys know what we've been doing. We've been teaching through the book of 1 Peter, sort of section by section, chapter by chapter, and trying to grab a hold of this big idea that Peter's trying to drive home is that the Christian or the believer is someone who this side of heaven is striving to live a holy life in an antagonistic world as he waits for the return of Jesus. And so for the past several weeks, we've been talking about authority. Cole taught on the authority of government, right? And how as citizens we're to submit to authority. Last week, I got to teach about authority in work relationships, the slave and the master. And this Sunday, I get to teach on the authority that God has designed in marriage. And so I just got to be honest with you, like my mind was racing this week as I studied 1 Peter 3, 1 through 7 about marriage, is because if you've paid attention to any stories I've ever shared about myself, is you guys know, like, man, marriage in my home was not a beautiful picture. By the time I graduated high school, my mom and dad's married and divorced three times by the time I was 17 years old. And so the picture that I have of marriage growing up in my house was a very, very broken picture. And I was thinking back to a time with my stepdad once. I used to, on the weekends, kind of side hustle a little extra money. I'd go to work with him. And one particular evening, as I went to work with my stepdad, I remember, I don't know why, I can't for the life of me remember, but I remember looking at my dad and asking him, "Dad, what should I look for in a wife?" It may not have been stated so sophisticatedly. Like, it might have been like, "Dad, what do I look for in marriage?" I don't even remember. But I just remember, I'll never forget what my dad told me. In the car, his literally what he said. He looked at his 16-year-old stepson and says, "You want to make sure her mom is hot." Just let that sink in for a minute. To which I responded as a 16-year-old, "Why?" And he goes, "Because at least you'll know the woman you marry when she's older, she'll be hot too." That was the advice that he gave me. It didn't continue on. It was it. It was like all marriage was supposed to be was an intimate relationship where you were being linked up with an attractive woman for the rest of your life. That was it. As I think about marriage this morning, I just want to address, just really quickly before we even get into the text, some of the bad examples that we had growing up. And like specifically, I want to talk to men and then I want to talk to women. So as we think about marriage, dudes, there is one thing that is clear and evident. This may not be true of every man, but it is true of most, is many of us grew up in a home where we had disengaged dads. Right? Like the most engaged person in our family was our mom. Our dads were just hardworking and out of the picture. But not only did we have disengaged dads, some of us grew up in homes where we had dads who had unhealthy emotions, right? That some of our dads were verbally abusive, some of them were physically abusive. And so that was the picture that we had of what a godly husband or what a husband looks like, what a dad looks like. Some of us had dads who were just marked by moral failure. Many of the marriages, I would say all of the marriages that my mom had growing up ended because of the dad's lack of faithfulness to my mom. One affair was found out to be 7 years long. And when she asked, "Is this something that we could reconcile?" he literally told my mom, "I don't understand. I've been doing this for 7 years. Why can't I continue to do both?" That was my example of what it looked like to be a faithful husband, right? But dads don't just provide poor examples. Sometimes moms do as well. See, ladies, many of us may have grown up in a home where not all moms were poor examples of what it looked like to be a wife, but I know some of you, and know that some grew up in homes where moms were the authority, right? What she said goes. Like, she was the one that ruled the roost. Dad and kids were all under mom's authority. There were some in here today that have experienced moms that were present, but not allowed to speak, right? Like, you know that type of relationship. It's to be present, but not heard. And so that was your example of what it looked like to be a wife. Some of us grew up in homes where we had mothers that may have focused more on beauty or empowerment. And so what we saw growing up was that a wife is someone who is sexually empowered. And some of us grew up with moms that weren't gentle. They were harsh. They were rude. Their words cut. And so my point is, we all of us here today, not everyone, but I would say most, have grown up with an ungodly picture of what marriage is supposed to look like. And so as I thought about this week, my kids, I don't know about your kids or grandkids, but my kids love to draw, right? And so they have these YouTube channels or they have these books where if they just follow the instructions of the teacher or the book, man, they can produce some really cool artwork. Like my son, who's 7, my daughter, who's 4, they'll often run up to me and go, "Dad, check out this beach ball that I drew." And I'm like, my goodness, like that's a legit looking beach ball. Like, I didn't know you could draw a sunset or a shark or an Indominus raptor. Like, my son is just producing these dinosaurs like crazy, just drawing them. But what happens when the picture that they're following is distorted? The thing they produce is distorted. Sometimes my daughter will walk up to me and go, "Look, Daddy, it's our family." And I'm like, "Man, that just looked like a bunch of letters and numbers." It's like, what are you looking at? But the point is that we grow up in a world where what we had modeled to us is not what God intends for us. And so if you look at 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, this is what Peter tells husbands. Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But what Peter is trying to help us understand is that God has a good, right, perfect design of what marriage should look like. And that we do well as Christian men and women, as Christian husbands and wives, to actually pursue that vision of marriage. And so what I want us to do this morning is to just dive right in and talk. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to do exactly what Peter does. I'm going to address wives, and I'm going to address husbands. Wives and husbands. But there'll be some stuff mixed in throughout this thing because it's hard to talk to one and not the other. And so one of the first things that I want you guys to see is this one truth, I think, would summarize verses 1-6, Peter's word to wives, and that is that wives, follow your husbands according to God's design. Wives, follow your husbands according to God's design. So look with me in verse 1. This is what Peter says. "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives." So just introduce you to a little internal conflict I had this week. As you look at 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1-7, you should realize or see that Peter writes 6 verses to women and 1 verse to men. 6 to wives, 1 to husbands. And you got to be asking yourself, like, why in the world would he do that, right? Why 6 and 1? I'll tell you at least 2 reasons why I think Peter does this. Is one, if you've been paying attention as we've talked through 1 Peter, you know that Peter has been addressing people in positions under authority, right? Government, work, and now marriage. And so one of the things that Peter is trying to help us understand as Christian wives and Christian husbands is that in the marriage relationship, the wife finds herself in a position under authority. That God has designed within the Christian marriage, within marriage as a whole, for the husband to be the spiritual leader in the marriage and the wife to follow his good and right leadership. But the second reason I think Peter speaks to the wives at length is look with me again at verse 1 at the problem that Peter addresses in the text. And that is that some do not obey the word. So Peter is trying to address a problem. And that is that there are Christian wives in the first century church and Christian wives today that are married to men that are unbelievers. They don't believe the gospel at all. Or men who are spiritually immature and disobedient to the gospel. And so Peter, in a very loving and compassionate way, is trying to help wives understand, how do you live with a husband who does not follow Jesus? And that's where we find ourselves. So Peter says, be subject to your own husbands. Be subject to your own husbands. I get it. Like, this idea of subjection and submission is not a popular topic today. We like to redefine things as a modern culture, especially marriage, especially authority. But if I had to, from God's word, define what I think Peter means when he says submission, this would be my definition. And from 1 Peter 3, 1 through 7, of what godly submission looks like in the life of a wife. And it would be this. It said, submission is a selfless, voluntary act of obedience to her husband in reverence to God. In reverence to God. The word obedience, I think, is probably the most, word obedience and reverence are probably the most two important words in that definition. As I struggled with this text this week, and I even talked to my wife, I said, babe, how do you define submission? She's like, well, what does the text say? Look with me at verse 3, chapter 3, verse 6. Verse 6, Peter says, as Sarah obeyed her husband, Abraham. So if I had to define submission, it would first be defined as obedience, following the lead of a husband. The second thing that I would say is reverence. Look again at verse 5. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands. So one of the reasons that wives, that Peter was encouraging wives to submit to their husbands, is out of fear of God. Out of fear of God. Look at this quote by Wayne Grudem really quickly. This is what Grudem says. I think he's so right. So when we talk about submission, what he's saying, submission to authority is consistent with equality and importance, dignity and honor. Thus, the command to wives to be obedient to their husbands should never be taken to imply inferior personhood, spirituality, or lesser importance. So as I think about submission in the marriage relationship, one of the things that I want to encourage wives is, and I want husbands to hear, is that submission is a voluntary act. It's something that Christian wives have to desire. Because here's the deal, it can't be forced. So as we think about husbands having authority in the marriage, it's not an authority that can be used harshly to overpower, coerce, or intimidate their wives or force them to submission. So we think about submission, it's something that a wife should want to do. As I was thinking about that this week, I thought about dancing and wrestling. Like, how do you picture submission in a godly marriage? So first of all, it's not like wrestling. You guys know what wrestling looks like, whether it's on a mat with two guys or gals wrestling around to pin someone in submission, or whether it's, do they even have WWE anymore? Or is it WWF? Anybody out there watch wrestling? I don't. I did as a kid. I used to have these little wrestlers that went on the end of my thumbs in a wrestling ring, like Jake the Snake and the Giant, and I mean, you name it. And so I would fight them in the ring or whatever. But when we talk about authority and submission in the marriage relationship, it shouldn't look like a wrestling match. It shouldn't look like two powerful individuals fighting for positions of importance. But rather, what I think submission and authority looks like in a marriage is more like a dance. My wife will tell you, I cannot dance. I'm 37 years old. We've had a lot of friends and family get married. And every time we go to a wedding, she tries to teach me the electric slide. And to this day, no matter how much practice I've gotten, like, I can't get this stinking dance down. But what I do know about dancing is that in order for it to work, is someone leads and someone follows. Like, you ever look at a man and a woman dance? It's this very well orchestrated event where the guy's leading and the woman's following. And so as we think about marriage, I think it is right and good to think about marriage in terms of the husband leading and the wife following. And as they do so, it puts this beautiful picture of what God designed. You can tell I can't dance, but I'm just trying to move just so you can picture with me what we're talking about. And so, one of the very first things, I think, as Peter speaks to godly marriages, is one, is he wants us to know that God has designed marriage where the husband leads and the wife willingly follows his leadership. The problem about authority, and we talked about this last week, is as a result of the fall in Genesis chapter 3, there are two responses to authority nowadays. There's resistance and there's abuse. We want to, by nature, resist authority over us. This is how we're wired. But then people who have positions of authority wants to use that authority to abuse. If you look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, it speaks to this precisely. Look on the screen. Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, this is what one of the curses that falls on woman as a result of the sin in the garden. It says, your desire shall be contrary to your husband, but he shall rule over you. So what we see in the garden is one of the results of the fall is that it built into the wiring of us is a resistance of authority. And so one of the encouragements that I would have for wives in the church is to actually let your husbands lead. Actually let your husbands lead. I get it. There are some of us here that are married to husbands that we think couldn't possibly lead. But that's how God designed them to function in the marriage. And we actually disrupt and usurp God's design for marriage when we refuse to let our husbands lead. Like, keep in mind, Peter is calling wives to this who are even married to unbelieving and disobedient husbands. And unfortunately, what happens is we have marriages where the wife is the spiritual leader of the home and not the husband. And especially if we're raising children, we're painting a distorted picture of what marriage looks like. But Peter doesn't end there. He continues on in verse 1. Look with me. In verse 1, he says, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. And so here we get to see kind of the purpose of a wife's holy conduct. And the purpose is that through their holiness, they would actually win over their husbands to Christ. Because look, we've already addressed the problem. Is that even if some do not obey the word. And so the problem that Peter is trying to address in the early church, in the church today, because I don't know if you've recognized it or not, but the problem still exists today where you have husbands that aren't stepping up to the call that God has for their life in the marriage relationship. And so Peter's addressing a very specific problem. But one of the ways that the problem is resolved is through the holiness of the wife. Through the holiness of the wife. And here's what Peter's saying. They would be won by the conduct. So Peter is calling these wives to live a compelling life. That their conduct and their holiness should actually make the gospel visible to their husbands. Because what I know has probably happened is these wives have encouraged their husbands to repent and believe the gospel. They've shared the gospel with their husbands. Year in and year out, the husband doesn't listen. He continues to resist. So what should a wife do? Peter actually says, hey, like you have every right to just be quiet. Just stop and demonstrate to him what holiness looks like. Show him what it looks like to follow Jesus. Show him the beauty of God's character in your life. And he says there are two ways that a wife can do this. He says, by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Respectful and pure conduct. This word respectful is used just one other time in the book of 1 Peter, and that's in chapter 2, verse 17, where Peter says, fear God. So what Peter is calling the wives to do is live in reverence to the Lord. Let your reverence, let your worship of God be visible to your husband. But then second, he's telling them to let their conduct be pure. That is without the stain of sin, right? Like in the home, they ought to be a picture of Christ-likeness and holiness. And so I believe that Peter is calling wives to live compelling lives. But here's the rub. Is that we know how quickly, in a matter of a moment, our witness or our testimony can be ruined by an ill-timed word, a harsh tone, or an insult. And so I think when Peter is calling wives to live a compelling kind of holiness, he's calling them to be mindful of their behavior and the words that they use, how they respond to their husbands and how they speak about them. And as Peter continues to go on, he says in verse 3, he says, don't let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing that you wear. All right, so that's a particularly interesting kind of rub nowadays. Because it's like, all right, Peter, like I get it. To be obedient and submissive out of reverence to God, I get it, but don't tell me how to dress. Don't tell me how to dress. So let me tell you, sometimes it's helpful for us to understand what he's saying by understanding what he's not saying. Peter is not telling women that they cannot care about how they look. Peter is not telling wives that they should not desire to look beautiful. All Peter is trying to do is help wives say, if you're going to pour yourselves into any kind of beauty, don't just pour it into external beauty. Actually work to cultivate an inner holiness that is attractive, hear me, not just to the world, but to the Father. Because here's what happens, like as I thought about that this week. The world exaggerates beauty and the church diminishes beauty. And let me explain what I mean for a moment. It is unfortunate today that the example of beauty in the world for a woman is called a model or a supermodel. as I was thinking about that this week, I was like, it is so unfortunate that the example of what beauty looks like in a woman is a model. The word model means example. But like when we look at models, what we see is one, how realistic is that? How attainable is that? It's so unfortunate that that's the picture of beauty, because what I think that it does, the world exaggerates it, says this is what it looks like to be beautiful. In reality, what that ends up doing is crushing women under the weight of what we think beauty looks like. But then the church comes along, and instead of exaggerating beauty, it diminishes it. And it says, no, what women really need to do is wear their hair up, wear long dresses that cover their ankles, and don't wear any makeup or jewelry. Why? Because the church unfortunately swings to the other end of the spectrum and calls beauty sinful. But what we actually see in this text is Peter's not exaggerating beauty and he's not diminishing beauty. He's putting it in its rightful place. It's important, but it's not the end-all be-all. It's not the end-all be-all. Instead, what Peter encourages wives to do, look in verse 4, is let your adorning be the hidden, circle that word, the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. Very precious. And so, wives, what Peter is telling us is not to just focus on external beauty, but cultivating an internal beauty, an internal holiness. And what's interesting about that is he says it's hidden, right? Because, I mean, how do we don't have the ability to see into someone's heart. We don't have the ability to see someone's character. But what's interesting about that is God in the Old Testament says that he is someone who doesn't look on the outward appearance, but the inward. So God has the ability to see hearts. We don't. Do you know when we get to see hearts? It's through conduct and behavior. Through the way someone acts reveals what's on the inside of them. In fact, Peter's not the only one that said this. Look at Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 12, verse 34 through 35. This is what Jesus said, that the good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, but the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. Jesus is pointing to the heart. What's inside of a person is revealed by how they behave. And one of the ways that Peter says that a godly woman adorns herself with hidden beauty is by having a gentle and quiet spirit. Peter doesn't say a gentle and quiet mouth. He says a gentle and quiet spirit. Problem that we have with some of these texts is they've been mistaught and misused over history. Peter is saying that a godly woman is one who has a quiet and gentle demeanor about herself. That she is someone who is not pushy or insistent upon their own way, but rather someone who is meek and humble. And it's that kind of beautiful character that Peter says is what draws a husband to faith. Could be. God is ultimately responsible for the one that's saved, but the godly character of a wife can be instrumental on leading her husband to faith when she lives the way that God has designed. When I was talking to my wife about that this week, she reminded me of a movie called A Walk to Remember. I'm going to age myself here, because if you're 30 and older, you've seen the movie. If you're 30 and younger, you probably haven't seen the movie. So I'm just guessing half in this room have seen the movie. Who's seen A Walk to Remember? More than half. Wow, it's still a popular movie. That's surprising. But here's what's super cool about the movie that my wife pointed out to me, is in the movie you have Mandy Moore, who plays a girl named Jamie, and then you have a guy named Shane West, who plays a guy named Landon. Jamie is really dorky and unimpressive. She grows up in I think her dad's even a pastor. She grows up in a Christian home. She's got really squared away morals. She's not overly excessive in beauty. She's really kind of under-impressive and dorky, but she has just this really solid character about herself. Landon is the total opposite. Landon grew up in a broken home. He's a jock. He's extremely popular, and he has really turn-offish kind of character. But what's cool about the movie is that Jamie and Landon actually have to do life together. I can't remember the reason why. I think she was tutoring him or something. But what's amazing, as Jamie and Landon begin to spend time together, Landon begins to fall in love with Jamie. And what else is interesting about it is, as Landon begins to fall in love with Jamie, he gets to see character that he had never been exposed to. Character like gentleness, character like holiness, character like, I think of Jamie, she was so considerate of others and a servant who would go out of her way to serve others, is even reflected in their relationship and her helping him. And as Landon spent time with Jamie, not only did he fall in love with her, but her character began to transform him. And that by the end of the movie, he was a totally different person. As I think about that, I believe that's exactly what Peter is trying to point here. Is there is a kind of character that wives can have that is an imperishable, beautiful character that can draw and transform her unbelieving husbands. So as we wrap up this teaching on women, now on wives, now Peter transitions in verse 7 to talking to husbands. So in verse 7, this is what Peter, if I could sum it up, this is what Peter has to say to husbands. Husbands, lead your wives according to God's design. Husbands, lead your wives according to God's design. Verse 7, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So there's a shift in Peter's focus here. Remember, for the past couple of chapters, Peter has been talking about relationships of authority. Now he shifts from the wives as ones who are in a position under authority to husbands as ones who are in a position of authority. And what is interesting about what Peter does here is he says two things, like two really clear things that Peter makes, so very important. To husbands, is that our disposition toward our wives matters. And what I mean by that is Peter is going to call us husbands to relate to our wives in a different way. He actually calls them, if you paid attention in the verse, co-heirs of the grace of life. So we're to see our wives differently. But then second, get this, he devotes 6 passages to wives, 1 to husbands, but to husbands, it's the only one that contains a warning. Peter actually tells the husbands that there are consequences to you directly for failing to live the way God has called you to live. But one of the very first things, look with me at verse 1, likewise, husbands, live with your wives. And just pause for 1 second. That word live with, it's not used often in the New Testament. When it is used to reflect oneness and unity. In fact, Paul uses it in Ephesians to describe when God brings the church together, he builds them up into one body. Does that sound reminiscent of anything else anywhere in the Bible about oneness and marriage and husbands and wives? Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, this is what Moses writes about marriage. He says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother, hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. The two shall become one flesh.
Husbands, when Peter calls us to live with our wives in an understanding way, and he uses this word, oneness and unity, we can't miss the encouragement that he's trying to help us see, and that is to actually live with your wife. Enjoy being in her presence. To be a presence in the home. See, when my wife and I were dating, we would drive to Ohio just about every summer and spend a week or two with her dad and stepmom. I love her dad, but let me tell you the picture that I got of him those week or 2 weeks that I was there. Her dad was a hardworking dude, spent 40 years of his life in Toledo, Ohio, working for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. He's about to retire. This guy would get up at 4 a.m. He would go manage some construction of some General Motors plant or whatever, and then he would come back home around 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. And the first thing that he would do is retreat to his barn where he would rebuild a go-kart, drink beer, and listen to classic rock until 10, 11 o'clock at night, go in, go to sleep, repeat every single day. The dude was in the home, but he was not a presence in the home. And I think one of the things that we do well to understand as husbands is that the moment that we got married, our single days were over. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that a very real spiritual union happens when we say, I do. The two become one flesh. That we no longer belong to ourselves. And I'm speaking to myself here because you guys have heard me share before in the past, one of the most difficult things for me to learn when I married my wife is that I couldn't just disappear. I couldn't just disappear. No matter how much I love fishing, I couldn't just go and spend 6-7 hours away. And the thing about husbands that we have to understand is sometimes we can be so self-interested. I mean, think about it. When we're not at work, we bring work home. So then we're home and we're distracted. And if we're not distracted by work, we're thinking about when we're going to hit the golf course to perfect our golf swing. If we're not distracted by our hobbies, we're distracted by projects. We look outside the house, the ladder's still leaning there. It's been there for 6 months. We haven't finished the siding. We have a long list of projects to do, and they never get done. I think one of the things that Peter would call husbands to today is to actually stop disappearing and be a presence in the home. Then Peter goes on to say, he says, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. In an understanding way. I got to admit, this week I racked my brain like trying to understand, what does it mean to live with your wives in an understanding way? I think the thing that Peter's trying to get at, the word understanding literally means according to knowledge. So he's encouraging husbands to live with your wives according to knowledge. And what I think Peter is trying to say is that God has revealed a good and right, perfect plan for marriage, and husbands do well when they see it and live according to it. And what he's going to tell us is what it looks like to live according to knowledge. And one of the first things that I want you husbands to see is that one, to live according to knowledge is to live in holiness. Like we can't forget the grand scope of what Peter's trying to do in his book, and that's to help us understand how men and women, not just husband and wives, but all Christians live in holiness in this world. In chapter 3, verse 2, Peter tells wives, let your conduct be respectful and pure. Can I just say that that's the expectation for all Christians? That's the expectation even for husbands? Is that as we think about our lives, husbands, I think one of the steps that we ought to take today in leaving this Sunday is actually begin to start obeying what God has called us to do. And that is to model holiness in our homes. We ought to be, as husbands, the example of what it looks like to follow Jesus. If our children want to know what it looks like to live by faith and fear of the Lord, they should have to look no further than their dads. And so Peter calls husbands to live in holiness. But then second, look with me, he says in verse 7, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. So another thing that Peter calls husbands to do is honor their wives. But what does he mean when he says they're showing honor to them as the weaker vessel? Here's what Peter's not saying. He's not saying that wives are spiritually, emotionally, or physically inferior to husbands. And just think about that for a moment. He's not telling us that wives are intellectually inferior to us. In fact, when I grew up, my sister Ashley, who's a couple years younger than me, was intellectually superior to me and still is to this day. Like if you think back to elementary and high school guys, you remember, like the ones who were getting 110 plus on their tests were not the dudes in the classroom. They were getting like 70s and 78s. That was me. Look at Hannah here. I don't think she ever scored anything lower than 110, did you? It's like a honor roll, man. Like just experience alone tells us men are smart, women are smart, right? But and then second is that Peter's not saying that wives or women are emotionally inferior to men. In fact, I would argue that women have a better time and they're better at expressing their emotions than men. And that actually is a sign of vulnerability and transparency and courage to put yourself out there like that, whereas men are find it very much harder to express themselves. In fact, if you do any time, Nick's sitting here smiling at me because he knows we talked about it this week. If you get together and talk to me about emotions, what you will find out, and I love to joke this way, is that I am mono-emotional. I have one emotion, and that's anger. It doesn't matter if I can't find my shoes in the house, I stub my toe in the shop, or something's just not going my way. The only way I tend to express myself is through frustration and anger. It's also not saying that women are spiritually inferior to men, right? Women have the ability to know, love, and serve God just like men do. In fact, if you just do like a quick gloss of the Bible, you will find some really powerful, really faithful women. I mean, Peter points one out already, Sarah, as an example of what godliness looks like. But I mean, just think of Jesus' mother, Mary, right? Someone with humble faith who took God at his word and that she was going to have a baby through the Holy Spirit. Think of Ruth in the Old Testament, who had the loyalty and faith to stick with Naomi and trust in her kinsman redeemer. I mean, you think about Priscilla in the New Testament in Acts, who went around with her husband Aquila and strengthened the church. You think about Lydia, who was a wealthy businesswoman in Acts, who used her property and her finances to resource the early church. There are examples all throughout Scripture that men and women are spiritually equal. So what I think Peter is trying to get at, husbands, is when we consider what does he mean to live with them in an understanding way, showing honor to them as the weaker vessel, what Peter is trying to point out is that God has simply designed us differently. And that is that men have strength and stature. I know that's not the same nowadays. Like you just watch CrossFit, right? Like keep in mind, like that's a new development. Throughout history, men have been stronger and larger. And what Peter is trying to help men understand is that their strength and stature should not be used to intimidate or coerce, but rather their strength should be used to protect and serve and lead their wives. Just the other day, my wife and I sat down with our kids to watch this new series on Netflix. We love watching things like Serengeti or Animal, like, and specifically lions. Like our family is a big cat family. We love lions, leopards, ocelots, snow leopards, you name it. If it's a big cat, we love it. But lions are our favorite. And just the other night, I'm sitting there and I'm watching this what do they call it, Aaron? What do you call it? It's not a pack, a pride. I'm watching this pride of lions. There's 40 strong and one male lion. And they keep harping on the fact that the male lion is the biggest and the strongest, the most powerful and fierce. There's a reason that he's called the king, right? But what amazes me as I watch this dude just lay there on the safari is that around him were all these lionesses just chilling, some resting in the shade, some nursing their cubs. And then you have all these dinky little cubs bouncing around, fighting and wrestling each other in the dirt, making these little round noises and just going after it. All in the presence of something powerful, something fierce. The apex predator of the safari, they are safe and secure in his presence. Why? Because his power wasn't given to him to harm them, but protect them. And so what Peter is trying to help husbands understand, guys, is that God has given us strength and stature to be used to protect, serve, and lead our homes. Here's what we have to do, though, is we have to understand how our stature comes across at times. That when we're in conversations with our wives, and we're trying to lead them, we need to be mindful of the tone that we use when we're talking to them. We need to be mindful of our size as we're speaking to them. We need to be mindful of our volume. Because these were things that God gave us to protect and serve our families, but if we're not careful, they'll actually shut them down. And so Peter tells husbands to be mindful of their strength because God created us differently. And then finally, Peter looks at them and says this. Verse 7. Since they are heirs with you of grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So Peter makes it very clear that in the marriage relationship, the husband and the wife are both waiting on Jesus. One of the ways that God can transform us husbands is when we begin to look at our wives differently, that they are co-heirs of grace and life, that their eternal destiny is like our eternal destiny. But then second, we do well to understand that there are consequences for us when we refuse and reject God's design for how we should lead our families. And so, as I said earlier, this is the only place in these passages where Peter provides a warning. So he's going to tell us there are consequences to husbands who don't lead their wives and their families according to God's design. And the way he says is your prayers will be hindered. So one of the things that we need to understand as a church is Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. This is what the writer of Hebrews says. If it's not there, I haven't memorized. Is it there? Okay. So in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6, it says that God disciplines those that he loves. And so one of the things that God will actually do to husbands who are believers and not leading their family the way that he's designed is he will actually come to them in correction and discipline. And the way that he does that, Peter says, is by hindering their prayers. And what's interesting about this word hinder, it literally means to actively oppose and thwart. So think about that for a moment, that God will oppose the prayer life of a husband. So when we talk about leadership in the home, a leader, a spiritual leader, is rendered ineffective without answered prayer. Because Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. He means that for all people. But think about this, husbands, is that when we don't lead according to God's design, and Peter says, it's not always, he may, and God decides to come and correct and oppose your prayer life, what that essentially does is renders you ineffective as a spiritual leader in your home. This is the way that Thomas Schreiner puts it. He puts it
so much better than I could. Oh, and it disappears. Sorry, so I don't have that one memorized, so we'll just move past it. Let's wrap this thing up. So God has a design for marriage. God has designed marriage to where a godly wife would follow the leadership of her husband. And God has designed marriage where a godly husband would show honor to their wives and lead them according to God's design. This is what Schreiner says. No Christian husband should presume to think that any spiritual good will be accomplished by his life without an effective ministry of prayer. And no husband may expect an effective prayer life unless he lives with his wife in an understanding way, bestowing honor on her. So as we wrap this thing up, God has designed both men and women to live godly marriages. And the one common denominator in all of this is God is at the center of the husband's life and God is at the center of the wife's life. And I would be remiss if I didn't say this morning that I know that there are some of us here today that may be experiencing struggles in our marriage. And as we think about how we're gonna handle those struggles, right? We think to ourselves like, we just need to focus on financial freedom. What we really need to do is if we could just limit the amount of debt in our marriage, then our marriage would be healthier, right? Or we need to strike a better work balance relationship. That's really what's going to solve the problems in our relationship. Or what we really need is deeper sexual intimacy. That's what's missing in our marriage. But like, I just want to point out from verses 1-6 that the thing that Peter prescribes as the solution to marriage is a relationship with God. And so it brought me back to this. Back in the day, when I wanted to marry my wife, I sat down with her mom because she grew up with a single mom, and I asked for her blessing in marriage. And she pulled out a napkin and she drew on the napkin this triangle. And she said, "Will, here's how your marriage should work." She put God at the top and she put me at the bottom, Will, Aaron to the right. And this is what she said. She said, "As you and Aaron pursue God and you get closer to him, you actually get closer to one another." And so I thought in the moment, I was like, "Neat, Kelly, that's cool, but it's kind of corny." But I really do think it sums up 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1-7 so well, is that husbands and wives have a responsibility to pursue holiness. And as we pursue the Lord and grow closer to him, we actually grow closer to one another. Let's pray.